Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Check out my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and let me know if you have a favorite author that you would like me to invite on the program. And while you're there, friend me, and I will friend you. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. And next week, on Tuesday, I have Bill Larson in the studio with me to answer your questions. So if you have a legal question about your intellectual property rights, or perhaps, and this is a very important subject, about trademarking one of your characters or all of your characters, if you have something that you think will translate into a merchandisable product. Last week, I talked to Matthew Dennison, who wrote a wonderful book about Beatrix Potter. And one of the things about Beatrix Potter is not only was she a great writer, she was smart and savvy. And she knew at that time that if she wanted to make the money before anybody else did, that she had to merchandise her products. And so she came out with the first Peter Rabbit bunny rabbit, and she created that as a toy. Then she did tea sets, and she did all sorts of wonderful things and made a fortune. She made more money from her merchandising than her books. So it is something to think about if you have a character or a book series that you think can be merchandised. Do not send it off to someplace far away where they can copy it. First, you have to trademark it. So Bill Larson will be here, and if you have a question for him, send it to me at Patsy, P-A-T-Z-I, what's my email? Patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I will ask Bill, or you could even call in next week, because this is an important subject for all of you writers. Well, I am so happy I have in the studio with me today one of my very, very favorite writers, Carol J. Perry. Hi, Carol.
Good morning, Patsy.
And today is the release date for your fifth book in your Witch City Mysteries.
It is.
Oh, this is so exciting.
It is. It's exciting every time. It really is.
It never stops being exciting. And, of course, this is the fifth book, and it's called Grave Error. Mm-hmm. And Errors, Grave Errors. And it is a great book.
And it has, before we went on the air, you were just admiring the cover.
Oh, I love the cover.
And always on the cover, it is the yellow cat, Orion, who is an important character in all of the books. And, of course, they all take place in my hometown of Salem, Massachusetts, where I was born.
On
Halloween Eve.
I mean, what could be more perfect? Now, talk about merchandising. There's something. She can just brand herself. And then branding an author, you know, if you can brand yourself, it's important. And in this case, well, you know, Carol is now synonymous with Witch City Mysteries. And, of course, everybody loves them.
They've been doing very well. And I shared with you my very special news that I heard from my editor not too long ago, that Barnes & Noble, in conjunction with Kensington Publishers, my wonderful publishers, I'm very happy with Kensington, are doing a special promotion of Cozy Mysteries from September 5th to the end of the month in all of their many stores in this wonderful
over
country.
Over 600 stores? Oh, yes. My goodness. Can you imagine? She's going to be in over 600 Barnes & Noble.
And they have selected, Barnes & Noble selected 30 titles, cozy titles, and they picked two of mine. And one of them is Grave Errors, and the other one is the one that was released last year called Murder Go Round. They all take place in Salem, and I'm just so thrilled to be in that good company of cozy writers.
Wow.
And there are lots of us.
There are a lot. But you really, as I said, the very first time that I met you, and you showed me a mock-up of, yep, one of your, of the first,
it
book,
was the, first
the very,
one.
Very first, yep, book. And I looked at it, I said, my goodness, this is such an amazing cover. And I said to myself, oh, I hope the book's as good. I really didn't know. You know, I don't know. I never seen Carol before. I never heard of her. And I thought, well, this cover is so gorgeous. It's just so evocative. He has, the artist has captured your spirit as well as the subject of the book, I think.
And Salem. Actually, those are not real buildings, but they are Salem-ish looking buildings.
Well, we feel we're in Salem.
They're evocative of just what I want.
They are. And the books are beautifully written.
Thank you.
And I it's hard to say this, but it's true. They get better and better. You carried the story on so wonderfully. The characters that you developed really from the first book. And tell us a little bit about Lee Barrett and about how she got to Salem and then what she's doing now.
Sure.
5 books later.
It's funny about the characters. If they're getting better, it's because I know them better. And I was talking to another writer just yesterday about those of us who write say that the characters, after a while, just dictate the lines. You know, we just write them down, which is true. They really do. And every once in a while, you get one that you thought was just a peripheral character, and they all by themselves somehow grow into a character that reappears. In the first book, Lee Barrett, who is has some experience in television.
She leaves Florida.
Yeah. She was born in Salem and was orphaned early. I use this information dump at the beginning of all of the books to get through it. She's red-haired, Salem-born, orphaned early, married once, widowed young. And what's the other thing? I don't even remember. I rattled them off so easily. But anyway, Lee has come back to Salem in the first book. looking for work. She's widowed. Her husband was a NASCAR driver, and I find that many of my readers are NASCAR fans, and that they like that part. So she has come back to Salem, and she stays with her Aunt Ibby, who raised her since her parents died.
And Aunt Ibby is a character who has really taken over the book.
She has.
It always reminds me of Peter Wimsey's mother. When Peter Wimsey, in a Dorothy Sayers book, when Peter Wimsey's mother comes on the scene, you don't care about anybody else. I mean, the mother is such a great character, and it's the same with your Aunt Ibby.
She is
unusual. Yeah. She is different from what... She's not a doddering old lady, that's for sure.
She isn't. She's a semi-retired reference librarian, and she admits to 60-something. She's very tech savvy, more so than Lee, much more than I. And she has developed into just a wonder. She has fans of her own, as you say. She and the cat. Sometimes people mention them more often than the main characters. Lee has a detective boyfriend. This often happens in cozy mysteries. And who am I to defy the routine?
Yeah, nice, steady, good looking.
Yep.
Hunk.
And I named him Pete Mondello, which happens to be the name of my son-in-law, who is a lobsterman in Gloucester. And his daughters think it's so funny that he's this hunky detective in the books. And they just can't seem to match that up with Dad. But anyway, that seems to work. Lee and Pete's relationship has developed slowly through several books. And it has become reasonably intimate. In a cozy... just by its nature, although there can be murder, has to be murder, it can't be by chainsaws or anything bloody.
Yeah, we don't want anything gross.
No.
When we're tucked in bed and we're reading a cozy mystery or in our favorite chair on the patio, we don't want to start getting the creeps and start worrying about is there somebody in the...
somebody under the bed. Well, they may be.
Yeah.
And we can have love and romance, but we don't follow them into the bedroom. And we can have mild cussing, but nothing really serious. So that your grandma can read it and your teenager can read it and still enjoy a good mystery. So Lee and Pete's mysteries all take place in Salem. In one synopsis that I sent to my editor, I suggested that they go to Boston for part of them. No, she said, let us leave them in Salem where they belong. So we did that. In the second book, we discovered there are tunnels under Salem, which there really are. Many, and there's a lot of history to those, and they may show up in another book. River North, who I named, and unless you're from Salem, you wouldn't know this, but I will tell you because you're Patsy's friends. I named a friend of of Lee's, River North, is a little Salem inside story because the main river that flows through Salem is the North River. And unless you're from Salem, you would never get that. And River turns out to be a witch, and she's in all of the books. And Ibby is a combination of my ex-mother-in-law, whose name was Isabel, and she was called Ibby, and my Aunt Carrie. And they were both red-haired, feisty, never would admit to their ages, wonderful, wonderful women. And I quote them liberally, the real ones, too. Like Aunt Ibby says in this book, a promise made is a debt unpaid. And she tends to give out advice like that throughout. And she really does dictate the lines. And I can just see my Aunt Carrie with one eyebrow raised across the room at dancing school if I misstepped a little bit. They were wonderful women, and I hope I've evoked them to their liking. They both passed on now, of course, but they live
since
on.
Since your books have a little bit of paranormal in them, who knows? They could be reading them.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I like to think that. the paranormal touch is good. Most of Great Eras takes place in the Howard Street Cemetery, which is a real cemetery in Salem. It was round the corner from a street where I was raised much of my young life. And I have never been afraid of cemeteries. I rather like them. I remember playing in that cemetery. Probably wouldn't be allowed to now, but I remember playing in there and not being afraid. And whenever I travel, right to the cemetery to read the old tombstones, and I just like them. And I think, although I have some, not all of the dead in the Howard Street Cemetery in my book are resting in peace.
Yes.
Let us leave it with that.
Exactly. That's what makes this book so much fun. Absolutely delightful. Now, you have progressed in so many ways in really a very short time.
Yeah.
It's been amazing that, you know, wow, one book and then just in a few years?
In a few years. Well, I've always been a writer. I mean, it didn't just fall out of the sky into my head. I knew from the seventh grade on that I wanted to be in advertising. I didn't know whether I wanted to be an artist or a copywriter, but because I had a little bit of skill in both. But I loved the words, and I knew that I wanted to be in advertising. And that came from reading a couple of books. One was Natalie Enters Advertising, and the other was A Star for Ginny. A Star for Ginny was Phyllis Whitney's first book.
Oh, wow.
And in both of those books, the protagonists were in the advertising business, and that just made up my mind right then. So I planned my life accordingly. Then in high school, I took some really bad advice from a guidance counselor. Guidance counselors tend to be the boys' basketball coach or something,
yes,
and I think they just
they
toss in this. And I said, I intend to be in advertising. Oh, Carol, the only way a woman could possibly get into advertising is to be a secretary. And I had a full scholarship to anywhere, and I had to go to BU because I was an only child, and I had to be in commuting distance of my parents. But so he had me go to the School of Arts and Letters, which was typing, shorthand, and all that sort of stuff, instead of the School of Communications.
And we know what happened in Mad Men.
Yeah. I have a very undistinguished career at Boston University, though I did learn to type, which has come in handy.
Yeah, that's
and,
useful.
And take pretty good shorthand. But by the end of that first year at BU, I was offered a job as an assistant advertising manager for the Pickering Fuel Company in Salem at more money than my daddy was making.
Wow.
Being of sound mind, I quit school. And I have not regretted it. I have since taken a bunch of courses, which I think would add up to something. But that's how it happened. And I have forgiven the guidance counselor for my lack of sophisticated
education. Well, you could
education.
Always name your next murder victim after him.
You know, I have a friend who does that. She picks
people. I know a few writers who do that. They if they don't like somebody, they turn up as the bad guy.
I haven't done that. I don't know anybody I really dislike bad enough to kill them. And they would have to be.
I better not write a book because I have a few. I have a few that I'm afraid I've gone over the edge on a few people. But
I don't usually know at the beginning of a book. Like I'm kind of struggling with book. I'm on book 7 now. Book 6 is already in the can and the cover's done. You're going to love that cover. And that's called It Takes a Coven. That will be out next March. And then the one I'm working on now, which is tentatively named Bells, Spells, and Murders, and it takes place at Christmas. This was by request of the publisher. They wanted a Christmas book, which I think might be a good thing.
Yeah. That's always great.
That, yeah. Because they kind of do special things with the Christmas book. So I'm kind of...
And they pulled them back, like, even in displays and things in stores when they have a Christmas
book. So I'm interested. They've already done the back cover copy, and I haven't finished the book. So here we go.
Whoa.
Got to hurry.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm working on book 7, and then after that comes book 8, which I have in here in my head, and book 9, I have the slightest idea what's going to happen in book 9. But hopefully there'll be some more after that.
Wow.
More books.
Okay. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So it keeps you going, and on top of everything else, you've been doing Audible books, which is exciting.
Yeah. My publisher, again, did that. They sold the rights to Tantor, which is a very good audiobook company with lots of books, and they assigned a reader, Claire, I forget Claire's middle name, Cooney is her last name. She uses all three names, so I've forgotten the middle one. And she's an actress and a folk singer and does Shakespearean work, too, and she is the reader for all of the books. And other than, I think she's Canadian because of the pronunciation of a few of the words. And she's very accurate. If I give anyone a French name, it just flows from hers much better than I say them. So, like, I thought of one of my murder victims whose last name was Pelletier, and it's Pelletier.
Uh-huh.
So she does much better than I do
on
that. And they're all out. They're both on MC3 and the one that comes with eight discs, whatever that one's name is. And they're all available. Many libraries have them. Libraries seem to like the audiobooks. I have a new Jeep, and my husband and I drove up to New Hampshire a few weeks ago. Oh, it's cool and lovely and beautiful. And no, thank you, I don't want to live there, but it's a nice place to visit. And I thought, well, now I can play one of my books from beginning to end. There is no... There's no player in my brand new Jeep.
I know.
They think you're just going to listen to Sirius or use your...
Yeah.
I was so disappointed.
Oh, I know. I noticed that. I'm glad I still have one in my car because I do like to listen to them. So, yeah, exactly. But it is exciting what you've managed to
and
do.
Your original question was it hadn't taken very long. And the first of these books, I think, that... Caught Dead Handed, which was the first one, I believe it was only in 2013 that came out. I said the first one took 20 years to write, and all the others take 6 months apiece.
Well, exactly. It's exactly what you said. Now you know the characters so well.
I do.
That they help you along. They can nudge you along. They say, okay, this is what I want to say. And Orion's not shy about jumping up there and taking
Orion.
Over.
He's wonderful.
One of the best cats in the business, I tell you.
I think so.
I think it's delightful. That, again, it's always so much fun when you have a cozy mystery and you become so familiar with the characters and so comfortable. I mean, that's the whole point of the cozy mysteries, that you are comfortable. And it is like sitting down with an old friend and you're not even aware anymore. You're saying, well, I've been spending all my time with this person. So it's part of the excitement.
And I'm so glad that they're very real to me and that they are real to many of my readers. And they write and tell me that, which is a good thing.
It is. It's wonderful. Well, I think that you've done a terrific job on the books. And kudos to the guy. We don't know who he is, but the wonderful illustrator. And to Kensington, because Kensington is a really wonderful, it's a smaller publishing group, but they do really quality work, and they've made sure that all of your books are really quality.
Oh, they
production.
Do a good job. They do about 500 books a year.
Yeah,
a lot of romances, and they have a section of black romances. They have LGBT.
Everything you can name. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a commercial break. Well, no, actually, let's listen to a book buzz moment first. If we have it, if Big Ed in the control room can pull it up, if it's no problem, Ed, is that okay for you? Because we, of course, you just met Rita Moreau, who
does our book buzz moments.
And I know she wants to do one for you. So, but this one is for somebody else, okay?
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with Book Buzz. Fans of cozy whodunits, let's talk about the Richard Sherlock Whodunit series by Jim Stephens. There are six in this hilarious series. The Case of the Not-So-Fair Traitor is book one, with close to 500 four- and five-star reader reviews on Amazon. Here's the buzz. A body is found buried under an avalanche of rocks in his well-manicured garden. Nothing makes sense. Crime scene is a mess. There's no money trail. There are too many motives from too many suspects who have too many alibis. Richard Sherlock and his pampered protege, Tiffany, must prove murder before Tiffany's dad shells out a $12 million insurance policy. Grab it today and see if Richard Sherlock can find the who in the whodunit. In Jim Stephens' lively, The Case of the Not-So-Fair Traitor. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio. I am so happy to have her here. As always, Carol J. Perry has joined me. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patsy.
Now, Carol's latest book, Grave Errors, is available today, is the release date. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online, and also in Barnes & Noble in over 600 stores across the country. This is exciting news.
It really is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's great. Wow. And to be featured, end cap position for the whole month. It's wonderful.
Wow.
Wonderful.
It's absolutely amazing. So I'm so happy to have you here today. And I'm waiting. We're going to talk a little bit to Susan Wiggs about her new book, Map of the Heart. and I'm just waiting for her to call in. I don't know where she is today. She might be on a book tour because she's also has her release, and I don't know if they have sent her out on a book tour from New York, but wherever she is, she's going to be calling in a little while, and we're going to talk to her. Her book is a romance with some historical aspects to it and a very fascinating book, and also a beautiful cover, too.
Good cover, too.
Very, very nice cover.
That's nice.
Well, you know, it's just there's so many things that I want to talk to you after. After we finish talking to Susan, I want you to update us again about some of the events that you've been doing, mm-hmm. some of the places that you go, and how you promote your books.
Okay.
What are some, like, just right off the top, are you very active? Which social media do you prefer?
I am not as good as I'd be on this sort of thing. I do have a web page. I do. I have fortunately been invited to be guest blogger on a number of the other Cozy Mystery Writers blogs. So I've been able to sneak in under the wire there without doing the actual work myself. And I've been on quite a few of those. I belong to a number of writers groups, Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America, and Florida Writers Association, Bay Area Professional Writers Guild, Pinellas Writers, Wordsmith. It sounds as though I never stay home.
So you're, yeah, exactly. That keeps you busy.
Stay home and write, woman. And I met Rita yesterday, and she said she's planning to review one of my books.
Okay, great. Well, it looks like we have Susan on the phone. Is Susan there? Or not yet. 1 minute. They're gonna get her on. Okay. So as soon as she gets on, we will start talking to her. And I'm just holding. I'm holding. She is an amazing writer. She has a wiki page. If anybody wants to go and click on it, you can see she has written a lot of books. And of course, she is a best-selling author. And I've always I love people who write series. She has written quite a few series. And of course, you have to really get your mind into it when you finish one series and get on to a next one. But also, she does a lot of standalone books. And her newest book is fascinating. I love any book that sort of draws in World War II history, because my dad was, of course, in World War II. He won a Silver Star, and he was there at D-Day. And so I always love books that have a World War II aspect to them. It just always is interesting to me. So in this new book, I really found it fascinating. Hi, is Susan there?
I'm here.
Hi, Susan. Okay, well, I have in the studio with me another writer, Carol J. Perry, and we've been talking for the first half.
Hi, Susan.
And I was just telling Carol about how much I love the fact that in this new book, which is called Map of the Heart, you draw in a parallel love story set in World War II. So we have present day, and then we have some flashbacks to World War II, and it's a wonderful book.
Oh, thank you. It was an incredible pleasure to write. You can tell from the way it's structured that it had its frustrations, but I loved every minute of it.
Well, I always love, you know, when a character has a different type of occupation. And this one is so much.
Yes, I know. Isn't she interesting?
She's
I always
fascinating.
Try to have the people in my books have more interesting jobs than I do.
Well, of course, your main character is Camille Palmer Adams, and she is a person who restores film, which is so fascinating.
Yes, it's probably not an overpopulated profession, but I did meet one person who works in the field, and his biggest clients, he restored old film and photographs, and his biggest clients were the Smithsonian and the FBI.
Oh.
So that's one reason that the action of this book starts off in near Washington D.C., but on the Delaware shore, so that she could conceivably have, you know, clients in the city, but still live in this remote, isolated area of the Delaware shore.
Well, did you have you yourself ever worked in a dark room? Because you write it.
I have. Yeah. Yes. And I always enjoy the memories of that. I don't think I'll ever do it again just because it's not a thing anymore, you know.
No.
Photographs are I'm sure there are people who use, you know, traditional techniques, but it's not common anymore. But it used to be that every high school had a dark room.
We did. I mean, we did at my high school.
Making out with your boyfriend in there, you could also make art in there. And so I always remembered that. And they do have to use the old techniques if they find old films. So that is Camille's job. And it's it takes her to some incredibly interesting situations. And probably the most interesting is when she finds that camera with film in it. And there are pictures from her family's past that she was completely unaware of. And so that was what sort of sets her on her quest in Map of the Heart to go back to France and back to World War II and discover, you know, the secrets that she never knew about her family.
Well, in this book, really, you have such wonderful characters that you've, you know, the family, the boyfriend, the people that she meets in France, and all of the other characters are so well drawn that one really feels one is traveling with her from as you say, in a small area, a small little town, and then we get a feeling for the town, for the family, a fascinating family, and of course they all have that some are hiding some secrets and some are hiding just feelings. And you just weave a wonderful, complex story that keeps us turning the pages.
Oh, thank you so much. I really wanted the reader to come away with a feeling that they'd really been somewhere. I mean, with a book called Map of the Heart, it had better, you know, take them somewhere pretty special. And so I really worked hard to bring that setting to life and to make it a metaphor for our character having to start in a really difficult place in her life and emerging into this place of light and freedom and peace and whatnot. So hopefully I did my job.
Well, you did. And of course, I know that you've been doing your job since you were 8 years old. I found it very funny. You know, I you're not the only author who wrote a book at eight. Margaret George. Margaret George did. Now, of course, Margaret George is famous for...
Oh, my goodness. I love her books.
Don't you love her books? And she wrote a book when she was 8 years old. And she actually sent it off to a publisher in New York who very kindly rejected it at the time, but did encourage her to continue. Now, in your case,
I think when you
sold out.
When you publish books, you have to be a little audacious like that.
Now, your first book at the age of eight was published and sold out in the first printing, I understand.
The first and only printing, yes. I think I'm a lifelong writer. I do know that it's possible to come to writing at any phase of your life, so you're not safe yet. there still might be something.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
we have to tell people the title of that book, because that is such a cute title. That you should actually write the book now, a book about some bad kids.
You know, I've always liked that title, a book about some bad kids. It kind of says what it needs to say.
I think so. It should be. You really should write that book.
I could
book
write
now.
A book about some bad adults now.
Well, no, I think a book about some bad kids. This is very evocative, and but it's adorable, and of course your brothers and sisters loved it, I'm sure.
I'm sure they did. Yes, they did. They still do.
Yeah. Well, of course,
the latest one, I went from a book about some bad kids to a hopefully good book about some troubled adults in Map of the Heart, and it's been a 30-year ride for me. I published my first book in 1987.
Wow. And since then,
yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I'm old.
Aren't we? We never are old, my dear. You're a kickboxer, right? Are you
I have been.
I'm a kickboxer.
The vogue now is high intensity interval training.
Yeah, I know. I have to
I've
do
been
that
practicing
now
that.
Because I was kickboxing for years and years, And then just recently I had to have a little surgery because of a kickboxing.
Oh boy.
So now, yeah, we're back to this other.
Maybe we should just do chair yoga.
I'm not quite to that point. Let's not get there. But of course, in this book, in Map of the Heart, intense sports are part of the background of the characters in this book.
Yeah, I think that one of the metaphors in Camille's life, the main character, is that she actually was a very active, intrepid, adventurous person until this incredible tragedy hit her life. And then she went exactly in the opposite direction, which I think is a very human thing to do. You go from being really, you know, outgoing and adventurous and courageous to just really kind of shrinking away from that out of fear. And so the journey, her journey is from, you know, that place of fear back to, you know, her more authentic self, where she's open to a new love relationship, and she's open to a new relationship with her daughter and her father, and learning new things. So I hope I accomplished that in this book.
Well, I think you did. And by the way, I love the new love. I love the love interest. I really like this character.
Ben, I know he's okay. I was picturing as I was writing, I was picturing like every sexy college professor that we had, and hopefully there were a couple.
Yeah,
you know, they didn't all, you know, have you know, the pocket protector thing going on. And so if you would picture like a young Indiana Jones, maybe
exactly.
That was my vision for Finn.
Oh yeah, he comes across. I thought, whoa, she knows how to write this character. I really like him.
Oh, I like to think that I'm married to one. He's a lot of fun. His name is Jerry, though, and Jerry doesn't really work for a, you know, for a romance hero's name. So
no.
He had to turn into Finn.
I love the name. I'm Finnish, so I related to it. I kept saying, "Oh, I like that name. Perfect name, Finn. I'm a Finn." I love it. Isn't it exciting that your books have been translated into so many languages? I don't know if they've finished yet, but you got Latvian, I understand.
I have been translated in Finland. I think it's just extraordinary. I think it's amazing that somebody in Slovenia or Japan or somewhere can sit down and read my stories. And I often wonder, you know, I'm only able to read the French ones because I can read French, but not other, you know, not any other languages functionally enough to know, you know, if it's been significantly, you know, changed to cover for cultural differences or not. So it's a real, it's just such a extraordinary thing. And I think what it does is it bears out my theory that love is the universal language, you know. No matter where you are in the world, people fall in love. They love each other. They hurt each other. They heal each other. And, you know, family is everything. And so I think that that's probably what resonates with all these foreign publications.
Well, I think so. And as I said, because of your writing, that you have this solid characters, and I really love the daughter also. I think, you know, when
Julie.
I was reading, yeah,
she's
Julie is
a typical teenager, isn't
yeah,
she?
A typical teenager, but also a very special one. And also the other characters around her that you introduced, I thought were so well done.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, of course, now at after all of this time, do you find you rewrite a lot, or are you one of these writers who
can
just...
You know, I keep thinking, you've done this 50 times. You should just get it right the first time. But I think it's part of the process to write something in one way and revisit it when you're doing revisions and find a better way. And, you know, as a writer who feels really... an affinity for my readers. I want to make sure that I give them the best experience, you know, I can possibly create for them. And if that means rolling up my sleeves and, you know, undoing some of the things that I had done and redoing them, then so be it. I'll go the distance for readers.
Well, your characters are really multi-dimensional, and I think that you create characters who, you know, have frailties and foibles, but they're so human that everybody can relate to them.
Oh, well, thank you. I hope so, and I hope that that's one of the reasons that the books will endure, you know, long after, and that the stories will linger in your mind. My favorite books, I can still picture, you know, Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird or Joe in Little Women. The characters that are just so vivid, you never forget them, Scarlett O'Hara. So that's always what I aim for. I have lofty goals there, but that's the aim.
Well, that's always the aim for all writers, and I think that you've really accomplished it with your books, and I think it's wonderful that this new book, which is called Map of the Heart, is available today, and I know that it is really exciting always when a new book comes out. And are you on a book tour?
I am. I just actually got back by the skin of my teeth from Austin, Texas, before the flooding, you know, became. There weren't actually cancellations in my direction, which is the direction of Seattle. So, yep, I'm kind of in the middle, but this is always my favorite stop is when I get to, you know, talk books on the radio.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, you know, for being on today, and I want to just say hi again to Carol here, because Carol is writing cozy mysteries. She writes books called Witch City Mysteries. She was born in Salem, so she's an expert on Salem and life in Salem. And I'm going to give her as a gift today your book, because I know that she will enjoy it as I have enjoyed it. As I told Carol, my father was in World War II, so whenever a book comes that has something to do with, brings me back to World War II, I'm always, you know, finding something interesting in it. So I really love the way that you had you wove this story so seamlessly into the book.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that so much. If readers need more information about me or my events to see if I'm coming near you, SusanWiggs.com is my website. And again, thank you so much for talking books on the radio and getting people excited about reading.
Well, that's what I love to do. I want people to just, you know, get a book, have fun, relax, and get away from all the bad news in the world, and just enjoy themselves.
Yeah, thank you.
You really, really need it. And as I said, when it's a book is heartwarming, and at the same time, there's a lot to be learned here. What happens to Julie, I think, is particularly touching, and mm-hmm. and the relationship between the mother and the daughter, very beautifully drawn.
Well, thank you. I hope that it resonates with readers.
Well, I think it will, and I know that you know, you're a fantastic writer. And all I can say is keep up the good work, and I will have you back the next time your book comes out.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Susan.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Okay. That's nice. Susan is really great. She has a whole series of books, lots of books, actually. She wrote a very nice one of the series that I have read of her books. It's funny. I don't know, it's not politically correct right now, I guess, Columbus. But her book about Columbus is fascinating. And that's part of one of her series. And then she has an interesting series called Chicago Fire Trilogy. I didn't really know too much about Chicago when I read that series. And I love to learn history through novels.
I do, too.
I think it's one of the horrible things that they do in schools is they don't let kids read, which is why I got in trouble so much when I was a kid. Because when I was in school and I thought a subject was, well, if I thought I had the subject and I didn't need to do any more work in it, or if I thought the subject was completely boring, I would often just read a book.
Sure.
And of course, on number of occasions that did get me in trouble, but I did get really expert at hiding a book within a book And that is why I have read 10,000 books, because I think a lot of them were read when I was in school. So, but it is important, I think, for teachers to understand that really one of the best ways to get kids interested in history is to find a series, a writer who writes about a particular. First of all, when a writer takes on a subject like you've taken on Salem, you do your research. You want to get it right. You want to get the details right. You make up the story around it, but the actual details are right. And that's, now Susan is a, obviously a brilliant researcher, because in this book, she has details, whether it's about film restoration or about France, she has done her research. And of course, some of it she has lived, she traveled to some parts of it, but this way, when you have a child interested in a character who is in another location, they learn that history just by osmosis. They just suck it in, and then forever they will understand that period of time or that area of the country or that country if a book is set in a different country. Like now American kids know about England because of Harry Potter. If kids hadn't read Harry Potter, half of them wouldn't even know where England is. We need books like that for all countries and for all time. But there are, and I think really educators could do such a great job for their students if they find the series that relate perhaps to the subject matter that they're studying that year, whether they're doing American history or whatever. Although I don't know if anybody does any history in school anymore. Do they study school history?
They do. Actually, my great-granddaughter, Jenna, who is 11 and is in the gifted program at Seminole Middle School, has world history this year and had, I think maybe 2 years ago, had some American history and can recite all of the states in alphabetical order.
Wow.
I make her do it every once in a while so she will never forget it in her whole life.
That's fantastic. I know. That's great.
I wish they'd had more reading, though. I was watching her yesterday, and her dad came to pick her up early, and she said, "Oh, I'll be bored if I go home." And I said, "Read a book." And she said, "Honest to goodness, Patsy," she said this, "we don't have to take reading this year."
Oh.
Jenna, you can read one of mine here.
Read Grandma's book already. What's wrong with you, kid? Because Grandma's books are clean and just lots of fun.
And I did write some series children's books. I started in 1987, too, as did Susan with my first published book. I had been published before in travel articles and that sort of thing, but my first book was Sandcastle Summer, which also was translated into German, and I can't read that one either.
Okay. Have any of the Witch City Mysteries been translated yet?
No.
Okay. Well, they'll be picked up, I'm sure.
Yeah. They sell them in other English-speaking countries. They're in England and Ireland and Canada, of course. But not translated yet. But wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine how they would translate it into Finnish, because that would be fun to see.
Yeah. You'll have to read it to me if they do. I like to do the research, too, and I do try to. In fact, in Grave Errors, I had to learn how a commercial washing machine works. I won't tell you why, but I had to do that.
Ah.
And now I know a piece of miscellaneous information that will never come up at a cocktail party.
Well, who knows? You never know. Now that people are going to be reading you all over the country because you are in Barnes & Noble.
I have a book signing.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that. Yes.
Saturday, September 9th, my launch for Grave Errors will be happening at the Gulf Beaches Library in Madeira Beach, 200 Municipal Drive, and I'll be there from noon to 2 o'clock, and they let me go a little over if so. And I do some book talk and some signing and give away maps of Salem and just generally talk about the book.
Okay.
Grave Errors.
That's nice. And tell us your website also, because you have a very nice website. You have little... What do you call those little things that you have?
Trailers.
Trailers. Little trailers. She has lovely trailers. They're very clever.
Yeah, they are. I like them very much. And I also noticed that on Amazon, you can hear little clips of the audiobooks, too.
Yes.
I have to get that put on my website. It's caroljperry.com. I was amazed that I just asked for that name and no one else had taken it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was good. caroljperry.com. The webpage is in process of being updated. So it may or may not all be.
Well, the trailers are there, and I looked at the new one this morning, and it's cute. I love these
the new
trailers.
One. I
these
love the real, new one. Yeah.
Now, a writer I had on last week, Anne Z. Leventhal, she does what she calls talklets on her webpage. And so she actually films little videos of herself talking about subjects, and then not necessarily her books. She might be talking about a subject. So you could also add that to your website, yeah. Little talklets, where you have a 2.5-minute talk about Salem or about a particular thing. You might even...
I could do that.
Yeah.
The people who do my trailers, ooh, I have to. The name has to come quickly because I love them. Talk about something else. It'll
okay.
pop in.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about that. Big Ed is in the control room. and pretty soon I'm going to be telling him that it's almost time to leave. But if you can think of their name, nope, they are... Well, whoever they are, they do a wonderful job.
If you look on my website and you look at the trailers, their name is on it.
And it's very cleverly done.
It is
very
done. And they do those little films, too.
Yeah.
And maybe I shall have one done.
Yeah. That's what you need to do. Because one thing we know in this business, it is business.
Yep.
Writing books is part of is a fun part. Doing the research is a fun part.
It is.
Then having to get out and actually do all the promotion is a little bit more of a challenge.
Yes.
And especially the business side. But I want to tell everyone, if you are looking for a business plan for an author, go to Denise Grover Swank's website, denisegroverswank.com, and she has there a business plan for authors. So it will help you get your mind set on how to promote your book, and that's another great thing that you can do. And also, I just want to thank everyone for listening today, because I want to remind you that Bill Larson will be here on Tuesday next week, and you really must listen in, because he's got some really good information for you. As you know, Bill Larson's a great lawyer, isn't he?
He certainly is, and he makes everything so logical and so simple that you thought was so complicated.
Yeah.
And he just tells it like it is, and it's a great relief just to talk to him. And it's Vaughn Henry is the name of the piece.
Okay, so she started talking about something. Yeah. Okay, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book. So take this day. It's a little bit dreary out here. Maybe make a donation to the people in Texas, because it is really sad what happened over there. And the rest of the time, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. This is Patsy with a Z, hoping that you will say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he is always so sweet. Thanks, Ed. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Bye-bye for now. Bye.